Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody that's listening into the Wise Women Media, the radio show tonight. It was a big, heavy news week, and of course, we've got so much information to share with you tonight. And I wanted first to thank our sponsors, which are Roundtree 7, Here Be Monsters, Daughters of Isis, Hoodooed, Power New Media and Public Relations, Tarot and Stars, Florida Nature Photos. And I want to remind people that you can see us online at wisewomenmedia.posteris.com. And if you want to help keep us going every week and help us keep the show on the air, hit us up on the WePay link, which is right above the first blog post, and dig deep and give us a little contribution so we can keep the flow. I wanted to introduce to you the co-chair, one of the co-chairs of the Green Party of Florida, and I believe it's Jennifer on the line with us. Jennifer, did you want to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about the Green Party and fill us in a little bit on your take on these elections, and did we dodge a big bullet, and what do you expect with Obama's reelection versus Green Party? And also, you probably have some more information on some local races, too, so... So you got the floor.
Oh, hello. Well, I don't have so much in the local races. I'm still kind of taking it all in. Even someone that loves political science like I do, it's just you have to take a break sometimes. But as far as the election and the Green Party, let me just say that we should be, you know, grateful for something representing so many points of view as the Green Party. And because it's grassroots-based. It's something that isn't sold and told to us. It's something that we're all just thinking. And maybe if we realize that we're thinking it, that would help. But we're told so much other things. We're propagandized in this country just by the marketplace. So, and what we have just witnessed was the marketplace, two male models, you know, one black, one white. And they were products, corporate products, and one had a product he was selling and the other one had a different product. And I got to say, yeah, the product that Mitt Romney was selling was scary. And I'm glad to see that, you know, people in this country wouldn't buy that. But the one that Obama's selling, you know, it sounds really good and it, you know, and I wish it would be real, but it's not. It's more or less told to us like that's the other, you know, the better choice, but it never really shows through. I'll be surprised. I'll be delighted. I will come back on your show and say, hey, you know, this is great. I was wrong if these things happen. But I can see the Keystone Pipeline. I mean, it's being built, the southern end. And if you disconnect the dots, Anita and everyone,
yeah.
if you realize that they're not going to build a pipeline at the Gulf in Texas, close to the Gulf, not connected all the way to the tar sands. And, I mean, it's just, you find out bits and pieces and you start putting the puzzle together. Most people, you know, get frustrated or they don't want to know, but those of us that pry into this, you find out that, oh, one of Obama's advisors actually is a consultant for the same company, TransCanada, that wants to put in the Keystone Pipeline. So it's just painfully obvious that these things are going to happen. And it's, as Bill McKibben says, it's like a fuse to the worst time bomb ever, so environmentally. So, I mean, that's the big difference is that the Green Party is a party common sense and good conscience. We don't take corporate money. We don't take special PAC interest money. So we are freed up to just say the truth. And also freed up to change our mind without feeling like, you know, we have to talk to this constituent that way or that constituent a certain way. But if, you know, if we find out that there's new information, we'll roll with it. You know, but I mean, it's just, to me, again, it's things like that we would all want to see public education through college as a right, see our infrastructure repaired and using our pooled resources here and creating green, what we call green jobs and the Green New Deal. And it's just that and things like getting rid of some of the rule by the banks. I mean, that's really, the banks are running this country. They control the money. And they make a lot of the rules. And people that are doing actual jobs that are worthwhile, that produce something, are sometimes barely scraping by. They're performing a service that people need. They're scraping by, and meanwhile, these jobs are creating money and out of air and trading derivatives and so on. That's where all the cash flow is going. And they finagle and work things so that the government follows their rules, follows the laws they slap down on the desk, say, hey, pass this bill. And that's what we're seeing in this country. So I expect more of the same. I don't think that we're going to see the Glass-Steagall Act, you know, reinstated. That went out with Clinton. And I just don't see Obama living up to his promises. There's, you know, so many things that he's done that the Bush administration did, and he's escalating it. You know, drones, you know, flying
that
over.
That is my big concern.
Yeah.
There were two things during this election that were not discussed that were not discussed by
probably
the two in power candidates.
Yeah.
Was the drone warfare, which is, I just call it remote control killing, which really it is. And then the other thing, of course, that everybody was up at arms about was, you know, climate change. And Sandy was such a very clear example of climate change. I don't know what else people would need. A clue by four over the head is what I call it, because as you can sit there and be a climate change denier all you want. But I got some aerial photos today from a friend.
Uh-huh.
And they were amazing photos. I wish everybody could see them, but they were from the ABC, an ABC affiliate in Australia.
Hmm.
And it showed aerial photos of the areas on the beaches all through, I guess, New Jersey and parts of New York, too.
Hmm.
And you could drag your cursor across the aerial photo, and it was like a panel would slide back, and then you would see that exact same picture, which is, you know, satellite imagery, I believe, and it's it was like exactly in the same spot. So when you slid it over, you could see what that whole area was like after
before.
Sandy.
And okay,
it was
before and after. Yeah,
it was just it was beautifully done graphically, but it was just devastating, the damage. There were like whole streets that just are still covered in sand, and homes destroyed, and boats destroyed, and boats in the middle of the street, and bridges disappeared. There were some skinny areas, like very skinny, probably intercoastal neighborhoods, that literally the water just crosses through them.
Right.
There's like rivulets of water that just cross over them. And I thought to myself, that's a changing shoreline. That's not going to go back to, there is no normal. This is the normal.
Well,
it's not going to,
I mean, they can rebuild it again, and that's, I mean, that's possible, and that happens. And storms do that, but here's the difference. The difference is the intensity of these storms. It's not the fact that these storms never happened before. It's the fact that, kind of like, I heard a really good analogy about it, whereas, you know, like home runs are hit in baseball, and they'll be hit here and there. But when players are taking steroids, there's a lot more home runs hit. And basically what's happening right now is the storms that are coming and passing through and so on have always been there more or less, but now they're coming through and they're on steroids. And that's the difference, because we're feeding it with the carbon in the atmosphere. And with the greed in the corporate world of always having to make money, because that's the way they think, that's the only way they think. If they don't make a profit, you know, it's something's wrong. And instead of just getting by and having enough, they can't say enough. So even though they know that, I mean, these people aren't, you know, unintelligent. These people understand that, yes, this coal isn't good and we shouldn't probably be doing this, but they're digging coal out of the mountains and blowing up mountains, beautiful mountaintops, and they're deforesting all these areas, knowing full well that that's not going to help the planet, but it's like they just keep, you know, taking things from the planet and thinking that, well, it'll always grow back, or there's plenty of areas, and they don't understand the you know, tipping points that can happen. And, you know, I'm not one to hope that there's going to be a tipping point happening soon, but when you've got people out there that are thinking like this, that are controlling our government, you know, it's a scary thought. So that's why the Greens are there, to present another paradigm. A different
I read
view
somewhere
of
too
saying
that
enough, and you can have a great life by saying enough. Yeah. What?
Yeah, I read somewhere that the coastlines change, and this is a scientific thing, every 150 years. And a perfect example of that is right here in our area, in the Tampa Bay area. We have a portion of, well, it's water and islands and intracoastal down towards St. Pete, and it's called St. John's Pass.
Right.
And there was, of course, during the 1800s, the storms were not named. And a storm had come through. It was 1859 is the year that I got.
Uh-huh.
And that storm changed that whole shoreline area through St. Petersburg and, you know, the Tampa Bay area. It probably changed quite a lot of the mapping in Tampa Bay itself. And because of, displacement of the water and everything.
Well, yeah, but it probably didn't cause $50 billion worth of damage, did it?
No, there was nothing there at the time. Of
and why would there be?
But the thing is, that's a scientific fact that the shorelines are changed. But now, like you said, it's on super steroids. It's like, you know, we've got climate change. So we also have scientifically the shorelines changing every 150 years. So you're incorporating two of these different things. And,
mm-hmm.
and it's just, you know, wrecking havoc. Environment.
And then we have this, population. You know, I mean, back in the 70s, people talked about zero population growth, and it's like no one brings that up anymore in the, you know, commercial media discussions. No one brings that up. It's kind of like, I don't know where it went, but we realize that this planet can't support all this life. And if there isn't so much development, there wouldn't be so much devastation. And I'm not suggesting that we abandon New York City or anything like that. It's just we got to start thinking that maybe there should be some move back from the coast at some point. And, you know, that would just make sense that we would develop in that way. And that's just the thing. It's just we're asking for more problems for people, and people are being duped into thinking it's okay, it's going to be okay, it'll all go away, we'll get through this, and then, you know, but meanwhile their jobs are threatened. I mean, I don't know, I really can't imagine what it'd be like to be up there right now with the cold and the snow, no lights, and I mean just slapped into that situation, Anita.
Just
like that.
Oh, yeah.
Just
like in a like New York where,
yeah.
you know, it's a vertical living space. So
mm-hmm.
it's not, you know, there's people up there that have been in those buildings living there for years. And if they're differently abled and the elevators aren't working, how the hell are they going to get down?
Oh,
I
absolutely.
Mean, you know,
and going
they can't
35
walk down
floors
the,
up and down
on
water,
wheelchairs or whatever.
Story. Yeah. And then, but people that even, that can, it's a lot to do when you're not used to that. And most people, and I'll give a lot of New Yorkers credit because they do walk a lot more than people in Florida, let's say, by and large. But, you know, it's still, when you have to do it, it's an eye-opener. It's not like, oh, I'm in
get some exercise and run
a few flights. You got to lug up water and food and then go back down and get more. You know, so that's what I mean. It's things like that that people are going to be dealing with. The reimbursements, I mean, do you think that the reimbursements are going to be any different than they were in Katrina? I mean,
they're not reimbursing anybody. Well, what these people are filling out is a loan form.
Yeah, okay, but I mean,
they're not even getting reimbursements of anything that's lost yet. If any of them were, if many of them indeed were insured, that information has been real sketchy coming out. But I know that the people were actually trying to get emergency monies so they could, relocate to a relative's house or a friend's house or someplace where there was electric, maybe inland. They were saying that if you have a power bill, you can go to FEMA. I think it was FEMA, and you could fill out a loan form.
That's
$200.
Nice. Just like our students can.
Pardon?
Just like our students can. To get educated, they can get a loan now. You used to be able to work in the cafeteria and work your way through college. Now it's, the cost has escalated so much. But that's everything is. It's a loan. It's a purchase.
This friend who sent those radical satellite image photos of some of the devastated areas, she also sent me a link. And I'm going to post these on our blog post for tonight's show on wisewomenmedia.posteris.com. There was another article that came out in Yahoo, which just really freaked me out. It was from Yahoo News, and it was Sandy inspires first doctors without borders, U.S. relief effort. So when my friend sent me this, I'm looking at it. Sandy inspires first doctors without borders, U.S. relief effort. I thought to myself.
We've now become the third world, Anita.
That was the first thing I said. I said we are now third world, number one. And number two, this must mean that human rights violations are being committed. Those are the two things I said with that. And I even left a comment underneath the Yahoo story, which I think a couple people, they clicked the thumbs up on it. Because I had to say that. I wanted people to know that's what a deployment of Doctors Without Borders would mean. That's what it means.
Right.
It's just unbelievable that most Americans are so they're totally unattached from this because it's not happening to them.
They don't even know what's
going on.
And a lot of people don't want to know. And quite frankly, it's not a pleasant thought. And I don't want to dwell on the negative, but there is so much of the negative transpiring right now that they talk about the robber barons of the 1900s and or 1890s and what was going on in the 20s with the ultra wealthy, and it wasn't affecting so much. You still had places to run, but now there's not too many places left to run, and people are kind of stuck, and I can see they're just basically wanting to build this, a planet of a global plantation where people are struggling, for any kind of wage. And,
right.
I mean, they're to outlaw unions and, it's all these fights are having to start again. I mean, that whole talk about what they said about women during this election. It was crazy talk, Anita. I mean, things that, of course, and it's been probably overstated so many times, but, like Aiken running against Claire McCaskill. I mean, the things that they were saying, it's like, seriously, we're going backwards in science in so many different ways, and a lot of it is to put women in their place and, place people in a place they want them to be in. And that's what, I don't know, I think a lot of people are just not wanting to know this. They want to kind of avoid this and hope that it won't happen. And that's unfortunate because that leaves activists out there trying to do things. And, it's important, though, to stay engaged. It's important to be aware of what's going on. Sometimes I think, it would be nice if I could just ignore this, but I'd rather know in the end. And it's just, it's just one of those things that we have to pay attention to, slow process where these things infiltrate in, and then they become, instead of strange and not good, they just seem like that's normal. That's what we're used to. For another example is something that people are accepting is the immunizations. And that if I ever saw a pharmaceutical giveaway, this is it. Kids having 75 to 81 immunizations by age 16, and they want to double that amount. If you call up right now a 24 hours Walgreens about something, that, you know what they'll say to you?
Have you had your flu shot?
Yeah, they'll pick up your phone. Can we schedule a flu shot for you today? Like, would you like fries with your immunization, your vaccination? I mean, it's that.
Yeah.
I mean, that is just, I couldn't believe it. We were laughing. We didn't know whether to laugh or cry. But, you know, it's, and that doesn't, that's really not normal. That's getting something like that. I mean, if there's nothing wrong if someone wants to get that and if people want to get that. But the fact that they're going to start forcing people to get these things, and, I mean, they already are forcing kids to get them, and they're already forcing the military to get them. And a lot
yeah,
of times they,
when
I
was in the military, I remember getting, you know, walking through the gauntlet. We actually, you know, marched over there. There was 50 women in our flight in the Air Force,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't even have, you know, injection needles. We had to bear both arms, and we went through a gauntlet of medical workers who used, you know, the airless air pressure or the needleless air pressure
mm-hmm.
guns, and we probably got four or five, maybe six different things on each arm. And I just remember within, I think, a 48-hour period, I was so sick. And, of course, when you're in basic training, it's like you don't, you know, they'll send you to the doctor, but, you know, it's like, you know, when you're on your last
leg. You got to tough it out. Yeah.
Yeah, you had to tough it up. And my training instructor, who was a very fair woman, she was pretty fair, and she said, look, she said, I know you can't march and, you know, you look like crap. And she said, she said, take your study manual, and she said, and just sit in your chair by your bunk and sleep. And she said, if anybody comes in, you're looking at your study manual. And she said, thank you. Do that? And I said, yeah, I can do that. And that's what happened. You know, I just posted something about this on my Facebook page. I got an article with a graphic, and the article was, Big Pharma is testing OxyContin on children as young as six to keep patent. The article is by Elizabeth Rentner, and the graphic is right on the very top of my Facebook page at facebook.com/AnitaMStewart. And the graphic says, the graphic has a picture of a girl taking the pill on a spoon with the package of OxyContin in front of her. This is extremely, extremely frightening, this whole trend.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
I don't even like
people
taking
people numbed down, dumbed down, drugged up, and yet then there's this, still the federal law, which was Washington State and Colorado have just bucked, and that'll be interesting, but, you know, opposed to a plant. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. We can put all sorts of unknown chemicals in our bodies, but stay away from a plant called cannabis sativa. You know, it's beyond crazy, Anita, when you think about it. I mean, I don't want to be, you know, have a whole bunch of stuff shot in my body when I don't know what it is, and you can't get the contents of the of what these vaccinations have in them, you know, I forget the word that it, you might know, it's the word that makes it effective or it kind of sends it through your body and keeps it in there, a stabilizer or something like that. They've used anything from, you know, monkey parts to, you know, they use mercury and aluminum. And, you know,
amniotic fluid.
Out of cans of aluminum, and why would I want to put that in there in my body, you know, and have it circulating inside your body?
Aluminum
or in my child's
body. Cause Alzheimer's and other conditions, Parkinson's, studies and things like that, they're saying that an overabundance of these heavy metals are what causes most of these neurological diseases.
Right,
and
you know what? These pharmaceutical companies have a government-granted immunity from prosecution. If somebody, if a child has, a neurological damage of, autism or Asperger's, they can't claim that they got that from an immunization. And if they do, there's a certain board that Reagan instated that you have to appear before. But the pharmaceutical companies are off scot-free because first you have to prove it was really them. And, you know, it's just this whole gamut was, my eyes were opened recently by someone that I know that had this situation with their child, and they went and took them for their shots while, being the good parent and everything, and then saw a reaction and then started looking into it. Well, they said, first they went to the doctor and said, for the next set of shots, I'd like to get spaced some more. I don't want to have all of them at once. And the doctors, no, it has to be done this way. And so parents aren't even allowed to space them. That's when they said, wait a second. And so I hope more people are looking along those lines. I mean, it just makes sense to want to know what's going on in your body.
You have to also look at the laws of your state. The last time I checked, I don't have children, so this is not something I follow very, very closely, but I know
a lot of people don't.
And from what I understand here in Florida, if you do not want to immunize your children, you claim a religious reason for that,
right.
A religious favor that you have to fill out. But I can tell you this, if I had children right now, there is no way, absolutely no way I would let them be immunized. And there is absolutely no way that I would let them have GMO food or food that's poisoned.
And that's the other thing. Proposition 37 in California didn't pass.
And I think that was because it was confusing to some people who were voting, and they probably voted wrong on it.
Well, and also there was just like so much money. I forget the amount of the millions spent by all these corporations that Big Food and big, the chemical companies and big oil, really, is involved with a lot of the chemicals derived from oil. And they were, their profits would be cut into. So they don't want anyone questioning anything, because when you question something, then that could, start a trend where people won't buy their product, and they don't want that. I mean,
about the Gulf of Mexico, I just got something in just tonight from the Bridge the Gulf website. There was a hearing in a federal courtroom, I guess it was yesterday, and the report went up today. And it says BP disaster survivors removed from federal courtroom during fairness hearing. And apparently during the proceedings, they were just getting, and this was supposed to be an open hearing for the victims of the Gulf oil spill, including medical, people who were affected medically, the human impact of this. And let me just read this real quick. It's three BP oil disaster survivors and community advocates were forcibly removed from the fairness hearing on the BP class action settlement yesterday, moments before the federal court heard objections to how that settlement would compensate people made sick by the disaster. The fairness hearing allowed U.S. District Judge Carl Barbier to hear arguments from those who negotiated the deal, as well as those with objections to the class action, before the settlement is accepted or rejected. They forcibly removed them, told them that they're not going to approve live streaming. None of them were live streaming the proceedings, and they were using that as a cover, as an excuse to just pick them up and throw them out.
Kind of like Julian Assange with his rape charges.
Right.
You can't be a whistleblower. You can't be a witness for, honesty and truth without, suffering the consequences. And
the point is, you can't piss anybody off, or they'll put you in some kind of sexual scandal. The minute a man is on the chopping block because he doesn't play ball in the military or in government positions or whatever. They throw a sexual scandal or a sexual accusation, and then this person's credibility is damaged or destroyed, and then nobody ever looks at them twice again. So this is what happened today with General Petraeus.
You think?
Yeah.
I was wondering if you think that. I don't know.
I don't believe that for a minute. I think that was an excuse to eliminate him from his position. So they were going to find a way to do it.
There was no juicy story either. I was looking for it, and he was like, well, he's very discreet about it.
But what if he had been discreet?
I don't know. People that are lifetime in the military, I'm sure that there's some that are really good people, but most of them have, I can't comprehend, you know, why they would go to that level, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a career, everything like that. But, I mean, you look at Colin Powell. Can you trust the guy? I mean, you know, he said we should go for Obama. Well, does that mean that he's been saved, he's come to the light? I don't think so. I remember him getting us into this war, you know, whether it's a guilty conscience that he's saying, you know, he thinks, okay, let's go with lesser evil, or if he's got some axe to grind, feeling like he got burned by the neocons, you know, and set up, and then lost his credibility, whatever it is. The whole thing is it started a war. It's killed people, and not just the young people from here that went with good intentions, thinking that they wouldn't be led wrong by the leaders. But, of course, you know, we all realize that they were, and a lot of us realize that sooner than most. But not just our young people, but young people there. And elderly people and people that are still suffering the repercussions of losing their family, losing the person that was their, you know, breadwinner. And it's only generated animosity to this country. And if we could look at it from the other direction, if these countries were coming into our country, I think that's one of the unthinkable things. We just think, oh, that wouldn't happen. But if they were, how would we feel? How would we feel if we had these countries surveilling, flying over us all the time with drones or, you know, dropping bombs on when we have a wedding and it was bombed and the bride and the groom were killed and, you know, and the rest of the wedding party and we were guests there? How would you feel as a guest? I mean, it's just, it dehumanizes. We've been dehumanizing people from other countries for so long, and it's nothing to say that, you know, people in this country aren't great. When I travel around the world, people, they really like Americans, but they also think that we're very naive as a people because we just don't seem to get what a lot of them get.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know. That's why the Green Party exists, to give us another paradigm, another point of view, and then instead of what we've been told so often, it's like, you know, it's this or it's that, And as we saw with this election, Anita, that the Green Party was left out, even when Jill Stein, our candidate, and Sherry Hunkel, her running mate, went to the second debate, and they actually were there. Instead of like them saying, well, you know what, we'll include you, come on in, we'll let you answer a question or two, you know, but really, you know, we're going to let the primary, you know, candidates answer most questions. They didn't even offer like that. No, she's arrested and tied up for 8 hours just so that she wouldn't get out and do, you know, something like, you know, get noticed by the news media. But I mean, actually, to tie her up for 8 hours in a chair. I mean, what kind of country is that? You know,
yeah, it's.
I mean, it's.
We both heard her tonight. We both heard Dr. Jill tonight. And she was on the Last Call program at our local community radio station on WMNF.
Mm-hmm.
And she came off as very informed, very presidential, very, I got to use the word elegant here because,
uh-huh,
you know, a lot
she
of
is.
Way, even with questions, and she, and I've heard her questioned pretty harshly, but not, definitely not on WMNF. I mean, they really treated her quite well. And where do you think we're going with the Green Party, and what do we expect to see in the next 4 years before 2016 rolls around? And what about the new Green Deal? We don't need Dr. Jill Stein to be president to make the new Green Deal happen. But why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about what the new Green Deal is?
Well,
and
sure.
What the Green Party would like to accomplish with that.
Well, sure. And, you know, that's true. She's laid out a plan, which is something that the other candidates really never laid out. They kind of want to keep us guessing and wishing and hoping and singing and praying, and, you know, and not really getting any straight answers. And, there's four pillars of the Green New Deal. There's an economic bill of rights. There's a green transition. There's real financial reform and a functioning democracy. So this includes fair taxation, the right to quality health care with Medicare for All program, the right to tuition-free, high-quality, federally funded, locally controlled public education from preschool through college, and restoring the Glass-Steagall Act, which will be, you know, what that is the, it separates commercial banks from being speculative investment banks, which is how it always was. Up until 1996 when Bill Clinton signed it off. And probably was that the same year he did NAFTA. He was supposed to in his second term. This is what why I'm skeptical about Obama's second term, not to get back on this, but that's what was supposed to happen was Bill Clinton, everyone was sure that when he, you know, ran for second term, they're saying, don't vote for Nader because if Clinton wins in his second term, he's going to put in single-payer health care for everyone will get free health care. It's him and Hillary's baby. That's been, and, you know, here we are, 2012, and that didn't happen. So
I don't know what happened with that, and I'm going to explain what I saw in D.C., because when he was president, I mean, I worked his Clinton's inauguration.
Because
one of the hotels that he visited that night was the hotel I was working in. And I remember after that, I mean, it was like D.C. was just so happy because, you know, D.C. had really been under the vestiges of, you know, the Bush family, Papa Bush, for, you know, 8 years. And they were so happy to have elected a Democratic president because largely the people that live in D.C. Are Democratic or independent, you know, third party. For the most part. And so it was like when the inauguration happened, it was like a huge party that went on for days.
Yeah, but I'm talking the second term.
Either way, it was just amazing. But anyway, in the months that followed, as I continued to work in the hotel, there were many, many, many times when Hillary was there and Bill Clinton would come in, and I was working in the restaurant. So I was waiting on these VIPs, and this were the people that they assembled around them to work on the universal health care. And I remember they all had the same notebooks. There was paperwork that they were going through, and then they were having conferences, and they would come into the place where I was working and eat, and they would carry around these books. So I know it was worked on. I don't know to what capacity
it was worked on,
or how
yeah.
far they got or any of those details, but all I know is when I looked around, they were all working on health care, and then pretty soon it was just all—it was all over.
Yeah,
it was, I think,
way.
In the second term, it was just gone, and nobody was even talking about it anymore. And I kept saying, "Well, what the hell happened with that?"
Yeah,
so,
that's what everybody was thinking. That once he, once he doesn't have to worry about getting reelected, he'll just bring that right in. And this is what happened, and that was really even more corporate money was brought into elections, and that's where the Democrats learned to go on to take just like the Republicans. So, I mean, and that's one of the things that I've, been, my eyes have been open to. I mean, I've as you know, I've lobbied in D.C. to get 100% public funding of all elections. And the Democrats seem on board, but they're like, hey, what can we do? This is how you play the game. And the Republicans are really, they scoff at the whole idea because they're ready to take that money. And it's Cynthia McKinney's campaign opened my eyes to that, where she said, to run for Congress, and this was back before 2008, she said it cost $20,000 a day is what you got to bring in. And that's when I realized it's not the lobbyists going in and hounding our government so much as our leaders are going to K Street, where the lobbyists are, and saying, please help me get elected. Don't support the guy running against me or the girl running against me. Support me. What can I do? And they'll slap the bill, go, hey, pass this bill, and we'll give you, $50,000 or $100,000 or something. And, the U.S. government is one of the best returns on investment. If someone drops $1 million for the federal government, they can get $1 billion back.
It's amazing that
and,
leaders.
You can't beat that for a, what bank will give you that?
Our leaders are supposed to be legislating, and many, many, many of them do not even have time to read the bills. The bills are purposely made as muddy as possible, muddy verbiage.
Yeah, like our amendments.
so they can't possibly get through all this legislation to read it before it's approved. Sometimes it's thousands of pages long, and then they're to approve it the next day or the day after that. And this is one of the reasons why each congressperson has 22 assistants. They have 22 assistants to do this research. But I also remember escorting, Congressman Kucinich from place to place when I was working on his campaign, and he was always, almost always, on the phone. So he had top-notch fundraisers for his campaigns, but he had to... So, and of course, let me state this, too. Congressman Kucinich was one of the few that actually read the bills, and that's why in Congress I've never seen such rock star power.
Oh, yeah, he was very dedicated,
His peers, the other Congress people, would run to him just to get a few moments of his time because they knew that he read the bills. And they would be heading into Congress, because I went with him, at one point when I was visiting his office. And and he didn't stop talking to people until he got to the door of the actual halls of Congress, from his office to that. That's a good 10-15 minute walk.
Yeah, and they could have showed him
elevators. And he was one of the few that read the bills, but when in any spare moment that he had, he was on the phone fundraising.
Yeah, and here's the thing, too, and even he had to do that, and that's just, and it's too bad because just, someone as brilliant as he could handle that, but, most of them can't. Most of them are just, that's all they do is party and go to events and fundraisers and stuff for their reelection. Every 2 years.
To do the research and report back on what the legislation says so they can assume that they know what they're voting about when it comes to vote.
Really, Kucinich and Ellen Grayson as well, when they write a bill, it's not that long. It's pretty easy to understand, and it goes right to the point. And, but for them to get a bill passed, it's asking too much, and that's what we've got. The Greens want to have their back because we think that they are actually. I've been in Alan Grayson's office as well, and I've seen. He was the only Congress member when we went and lobbied about the 100% public funding for all elections. He was the only one that was just moving and grooving. His office people were doing stuff, and they were researching. And it wasn't two donors so much as they were. Actually trying to get stuff done. And other offices, I saw them playing, just online kind of hanging out. So as far as research, I don't know that some offices did that much, and maybe just the money will take care of everything.
I like Alan Grayson. I think a straight shooter. I don't, the way he always blames the Republicans for everything, but as far as a straight shooter and being in his office working for the people, I think he's extremely sincere. And they had a quote on him on WMNF. I think it was on one of the morning news things. They repeated a quote that he had said about Medicaid, Medicare, and he was furious, just livid over what the Republican Party's plan was in regards to seniors. He just was going off, and he said, "We are not throwing Grandma out in the street." He was very purposeful about that. He's just going, not on my watch. This isn't going to happen,
That's why we have someone like him. We have Bernie Sanders. There's a few in there. I mean, I could probably count on the U.S. Congress, maybe in both hands. There's the good ones. But most of those, nearly 600 people in to have like 10 good ones, it's pretty scary. But, I just want to get back to actually the Green New Deal.
Yeah, tell us more.
One of the things when you brought up, about D.C., we're talking about that, people are maybe aware that Puerto Rico is, deciding whether they have a referendum, deciding whether they want to become a 51st state. D.C. statehood is an important thing because the people you were talking about, the people that live in D.C. are underrepresented. They do not have an actual vote. It's kind of
right.
Like, I live in this, I'm just going to throw it out here. There is maybe the state's biggest, suburban, I can't think of the word, but suburb. That's it. It's a suburb. We don't really have any. You're fading.
We're not hearing you very clearly.
Oh, okay. Spring Hill isn't. Okay. Spring Hill isn't an incorporated city. It's just a big subdivision of Brooksville. We don't have a mayor. We don't have a city government. We're just under the county. And basically, a lot of people in Spring Hill feel like these five people in the county are running everything and we don't have as much say. But D.C. has been going on. The people of the District of Columbia have been like that since the get-go. There they are in the seat of power, and they're powerless.
Remember when I was living there that, Eleanor Holmes Norton, she's a very busy woman. Non-voting representative in Congress for the actual, federal city of Washington,
right.
D.C., and she's still
and
there.
And what is that? And non-voting.
Yeah, and
like,
I remember, I had, at the time I lived there, I had several different things that I needed to go to her office about that were personal. One of them had to do with unemployment. There was a couple other things. And I just remember that her office was top-notch. My complaints or my concerns were addressed immediately, if not within a week. And she did her work. She did her work. They were not playing in her office. So I would really like to see, people in D.C. and Puerto Rico be represented. I think that's an amazing thing. I hope that that's done soon for those people because they've been waiting a long time.
And that is something the D.C. statehood is in the Green New Deal, revoking corporate personhoods in the Green New Deal, protecting our right to vote. Jesse Jackson, Representative Jesse Jackson, had a bill called Right to Vote Amendment, and we support that. Also, the Enact the Voter Bill of Rights, guarantee us a voter marked paper ballot for all voting, and replacing partisan oversight of elections, and doing away with so-called winner-take-all elections, and reinstate like a instant runoff voting and proportional representation like they have in Parliament and in some of the developed countries that have been going along pretty well all these years. And then replace big money control of election campaigns with full public financing, guarantee equal access to the ballot and to the debates to all qualified candidates, abolish Electoral College, and implement
direct. I think the Electoral College is probably one of the biggest scourges on the American people. This is just we have to have election reform, and we have to have media reform, and the two of them have to go together. And I don't know if it's going to get done before 2016. We talked about this back in 2008 after those elections were done. It has to be done because...
Oh, yeah. So Greens going forward are just going to keep working on these issues, and we're a vehicle. I've talked with certain people from Occupy, and they're just like, well, you can't do it by, working with government, but you have to have some sort of organization to do things, to actually get things done. And I think a lot of them realize now, but, sitting out of the election is just what the corporate powers want. If you don't want to vote for them, they just assume you just stay home and don't try to vote anyone else in, don't try to get any other ideas in. And these are things we're going to be working on, investing in green businesses, providing, the ideas for green jobs, repealing the Patriot Act and the parts of the National Defense Authorization Act that violate civil liberties, the prohibiting of the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI to conspire with local police forces to suppress our freedoms and assembly of speech, ending the war on immigrants, and reducing military spending, and restoring the National Guard and the Coast Guard. So, this disclosure of things like GMOs and food labeling. So there's just a lot of things that need to be done, and rather than having us all putting out fires and trying to, work on this issue and that issue, the Green Party is a vehicle, and union there is strength, and that's unions at work and unions in our political life. Because after all, Anita, politics means being astute and looking out for your own best interests. And so more people should be political.
Do you think that Jill will be running again? Do you think that there's a possibility of that? I kind of gathered that might be a possibility after listening to the interview today.
But oh, I'm just, or too?
I'm just wondering if you caught that vibe, too.
Well, I think that she's in it for the long haul, and we're in it for the long haul. And, this has been a candidate, both candidates on this ticket, Jill and Sherry, worked very hard this whole time. And they were crisscrossing across the United States, using, very little money. They were getting by and staying in people's homes. There was no, Air Force One or Secret Service, protection for them, but they still managed to get around quite a lot, and they were, they were in the right place at the right time, and they were in key areas. Sherry was up at in Philadelphia when Superstorm Sandy hit, and she gave a review of what she saw, and Jill was down by the Keystone Pipeline when they were, she actually got her third arrest.
Yeah, she got arrested
life.
There,
it all
right?
All happened in the last 4 months. What's that?
She got arrested at the Keystone.
For giving food. Just like food, not bombs. Like that's a crime. Giving people food. I mean, it's. I don't know.
It's beyond the pale.
Stop thinking about it, huh?
What's actually been criminalized in recent years. It's just not something I understand anymore, and it really is meant to silence us. That's what it is.
And things that you wouldn't even. When I went to see to participate in the Poor People's March during the RNC, I thought, well, I knew the area a little bit, and I found out, I had been to Romneyville. But I found out where that was, and I thought, oh, good, I'll just go park by a restaurant that I know, Cafe Hey. I'll give them a little shout-out.
Oh, yeah, but, I love them.
Yeah, and I they're awesome, and great food and great people. But so I parked by there, and then I was going to walk to it. Well, it was kind of rainy looking, and so I brought my umbrella, and I'm walking along, and I see all these police, these officers, and they're all in these, you know, these tan uniforms, and they're all kind of, they're like under the bridge and under buildings, you know, seeking shelter, you know, and it's just starting to drizzle, and I started to realize, I'm like, oh, wait, you're not supposed to have weapons and so on. I wonder if they consider an umbrella a weapon. And so then I asked them, I said, am I going to get in trouble for having an umbrella, having this? And they said, does it have a metal tip on the end? And I'm like, I don't even know. And I looked, and no, it didn't. So then they go, you're okay. I'm thinking, well, okay. But you know, just something like that, you just get that uneasy feeling like, uh-oh, am I going to be in trouble with some common little thing like that that is necessary when it's going to be pouring rain? And it did pour rain that day. But, you know, that's the kind of thing, like, what's happening? Everything's become a crime or a potential crime. And then, you know, and then the irony there was that you could have a concealed gun.
Right.
It's okay. I don't know. I don't know, Anita.
I really want to see the new Green Deal happening. I really, really am very hopeful for 2014 and 2016.
And 2014, yeah. We got some,
you know, we can maybe work on, you know, congressional seats and, you know, other, you know, smaller localized campaigns for 2014. And get people in place, and I think that's really, really important. But right now, you know, I think I'm not sure. This is just my personal opinion. I'm not sure that presidential campaigns are what we should be doing. I think we really need to focus on getting people in place locally. I think that's really, really our need now is to just, because politics is local. Politics is local.
Well, the Green Party is grassroots and local. However, the attention, the growth of the party comes from a broader sense. And so having a presidential candidate, it achieves two things. And one is to get that notoriety to, you know, get people aware that there is a Green Party, that there is something that you can work with, and here's the GP.org website, and here's how we connect, and here's, you know, what we're implementing, and see if you agree. And a lot of people, I think, will agree once they see, if they go to GP.org, our website, they can find out which candidates, you know, did win nationwide, and we have plenty in office right now at local and lower levels, and some congressional U.S. I think there's some that are, I believe, I mean, definitely in state houses that, I don't know, we'll have to wait and see. But there were people running for U.S. offices, too, and I don't think that's a bad idea. I think that it's good to have that, you know, all the way through. But the second reason that we do it is to keep ballot access, because if we don't run a presidential candidate every election, we lose our ballot status in several states. And it's not worth it. It's just too hard.
Oh, okay.
I mean, for instance, in Pennsylvania, to get on the presidential ballot, you had to have, if you're Republican or Democrat, you need 2,000 signatures. And if you're a third party, you need 20,000 signatures.
You know, I never understood that. I think that's just completely crazy.
It is.
Don't you?
In some states, it's 50,000 signatures. I mean, seriously. How do you, you know, I think it's really hard to get 100 signatures. I've done it. I've been out there trying to get, when we had the Amendment 4 for Hometown Democracy Act, that took us years to get the amount of signatures required. And we, you know, people worked very hard to get that. And then the Chamber of Commerce spent a lot of money to defeat it. And then it was really a slap in the face when we had the Amendment 4 this year. And they kind of went off that publicity, the good publicity of the Amendment 4, that people had worked so hard for, the Hometown Democracy Amendment was a good thing. And then the Amendment 4 this year was tax our assets off, you know, and it was basically what that was, and I believe that's one that, of the three that got passed, It's something I still haven't even looked into yet. I figure I'll find these things out soon. But I know that there was three tax related amendments that were the ones that passed. And
right.
Taxing your assets off is really another break to the people that have a lot of money, that really
right.
have the assets. And, you know, there's all these people voting for it, like, oh, yeah, but it's, you know, it's going to really save me money, but it really doesn't affect you that much unless you have a lot of assets, boats and
right.
extra homes and so on, and, you know, lots of tangible items. So, you know, but, I mean, that's you know, what's been done. So it's not fair, and it's not the right direction for a country that has the potential to be such a great, you know, we still have a, all in all, have a pretty good image in the world because of just the accomplishments and the, you know, that a lot of great people in this country have achieved. And, you know, we could restore that greatness. We could, you know, start to make amends for some of the things that weren't so great if we change course. But we really got to
change. It's really, really going to take people coming together and working very hard and, you know, forgetting the differences, which I think are, you know, just meant to really divide us.
Oh, and, absolutely. Divide and conquer. An old war trick.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it doesn't, to me, it's not the party that is as important as are you going to treat others with respect, you know? Because
mm-hmm.
I'm, for instance, sitting on this Soil and Water Board, you know, and
mm-hmm.
I'm sitting there, you know, I think three, it's nonpartisan board. Three are,
mm-hmm.
I would say, conservative, and then I'm not going to say party names. Another member
right.
of the board is a third party, and I'm a third party, and, you know, it's very interesting to get along. There's
yeah.
different ways doing things, but you know, I had a chance to talk to somebody about that, and they were a Tea Party person, and I was very blunt. I said, you know what party I am, and you know how I voted. And this person said, that doesn't matter. and it was just very cool because we could sit and really have, you know, a real conversation about issues that were going on, and I think that's important. I think we should all be doing that. And
and I think that by and large, a lot of people agree more than they disagree. And I mean, for one thing, there's things we can align on, and that's like 100% funding for all elections. I think, the latest percentage I heard was 83% of the voting public thinks there's too much money in elections. So right there is a great place to start. And to me, that's the main issue I'd like to work on personally is to get that money out. I mean, there's always going to be a way to sneak some bribery in here and there, but if it's a federal crime, if it's just not done anymore, it's going to really clean up the whole act of Washington, because the people actually go in there and do their work instead of, you know, beg for donations and trying to stay in office.
You can actually put a plug in for, you know, the great organization Move to Amend,
mm-hmm.
Which is very, very hard to take the money out of politics. Corporations are not people, and money is not free speech.
Right.
If nobody out there that's listening has ever seen David Cobb speak, I encourage you to check him out on YouTube as he gives his whole speaking engagement.
And he's coming back. He's coming back.
And that's a perfect segue, because I really wanted to let people know. Oh, number one, if you want to go see movetoamend.org, that's online. The site is wonderful. It has a lot of research information about the whole movement. David Cobb will be, you will see the convergences that are happening across the country, and the one that's local to us will be in Gainesville. I'm not sure the exact date, but it's marked on the map on movetoamend.org.
Well, and it might be down in Tampa area December 20th, 21st, somewhere around there, so we'll just keep our eyes peeled on that.
Good. Who's been? So. Has somebody been organizing that? Because I have not.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to try to get people to organize. But,
okay. Well, great.
We'll
then I
then I'll keep
do
you
that.
Posted. So, yeah. Well, hey, Anita, always a pleasure to chat with you. And so I got to get skedaddling because I got to go to work in the morning.
Well, thank you for being on the show, and we did, wow, it was like an hour, and it looks like an hour and 10 minutes, so that was good, and I'd like to be able to maybe change the description of the show and state that we had you on, so I'll probably do that tomorrow, but I want to promote it in some of the Green Party groups on Facebook, too, so people can go and listen to the archive, but
always plenty to sort of pay.
Say that again?
I said always plenty to say, and, you know, it's like, it just, I'll be happy to see this country start going in a better direction, and then I don't have to complain. So,
yeah, I mean,
this
is, I think this could be the start of something really good, so I'm hoping that's what happens. And
well, that's it, and I like to be upbeat about things, and I joke about things, and sometimes people don't get my humor, but, you know, you gotta have a good sense of humor, because otherwise this stuff could bring you down. But I really believe in my heart of hearts, Anita, that we can change things. It's just a matter of the will. And when I go to, like, national meetings of the Green Party, I get so empowered by seeing people from all over the United States, from as far away as Hawaii and Washington State, and, you know, a lot of people from California and just Maine, and just all these people come together, and you feel like, oh, good, I'm not alone. I'm not. There's so many activists out there and doing, you know, way more than I've been doing, and just so much experience and just so much knowledge, and it just makes you feel really good to know that there's people out there doing that, and so I think we should be glad that there is a Green Party, and no matter what party a person chooses to belong to, I think we should be glad that there's a party that's you know, alive and kicking like we are. So,
and I encourage everybody to go to gp.org and read the platform of the Green Party, and you'll find really what most people want. What is the URL for the website for the Florida Green Party? It's gpfl.org, is it not?
Yeah, it is. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, gpfl.org, if you want to connect with us through the Green Party here in Florida. But thanks, Jennifer Sullivan, for being on the show. And I just want to encourage everybody to check us out next week. Same time, same place, 11 o'clock. You can see any promo about the upcoming show at wisewomenmedia.posteris.com. Don't forget our sponsors, and hit us up on the WePay link if you want to keep us going. And everybody have a great weekend, and we'll see you on the radio next week. Good night.